Well, hello there, ladies and gentlemen. The MSS crew is back, and thanking you for joining us here in the Fred Bertelsen Memorial Old Time Radio Room of RadioOutOfThePast.org. And this is your MSS host, Luis Jr., assisting with bringing to you yet another exciting and exhilarating internet broadcast of Michael's Saturday Night Surprise. We've got another round of OTR surprises coming your way. All you need to do is stick around for a little while and join us while we hit the button in the studio and get these things rolling. So, if you would all just allow me a moment to introduce the presenter for tonight's program. Just so happens to be a very popular voice around the old-time radio room and accessible world, and you might know who I'm talking about, Joy Jackson. Yes, the librarian is back, and she's put together another show for your listening enjoyment. As always, I would just ask if everyone could please sit back, grab your favorite drinks and snacks, and enjoy the program. Okay, Joy, the microphone is yours. Take it away.
Welcome to the MSS edition of Treasures Old and New from ART. I wanted to share a newly written show that we did this last Christmas party. Have you ever wondered how Santa gets back on the job after his Hawaiian vacation? Well, here's Charter Flight, Episode 2, Destination North Pole, written by Ken Lease.
American Radio Theater brings you a holiday confection for ART's Christmas party. It's Episode 2 of Charter Flight, Destination North Pole, based on an old-time radio series, Charter Flight, written by Gus C. Bays. Episode 2 is written by Ken Lease.
NC-2481 to Midway Tower. NC-2481 to Midway Tower, over.
Tower to NC-2481, over.
NC-2481, requesting clearance on flight plan number 283 for Honolulu, over.
Roger, NC-2481, you are cleared to Honolulu. Have a nice flight, over.
Give her the gun, Dietz. Honolulu, here we come. Again.
Wilco, Tony.
Charter Flight, starring Tony Barrett.
Well, Dietz and I were in the air again, just like we liked it. The Dutch Harbor trip had been a bust that netted our little company just enough to cover our expenses for the trip and left us with the lingering smell of whale oil in the cargo compartment. With Midway well behind us, Dietz and I had tuned in a Honolulu radio station, which made for a very pleasant flight. We had even found a little business to take along. A professor and his lady friend who had missed a connection in Hong Kong, but could still make their stateside flight from Honolulu if we could get them there on time. With the fall winds at our back, we should do that just fine. And since we were going to be flying empty anyway, it was nice to pick up a few coins on the way. I knew our stay in Hawaii was going to be short, though. Dietz was anxious to get home to his girl Lily, who was patiently, Dietz's word, waiting for him in San Francisco, our base of operations. We also wanted to get home in time to get in on some of the Christmas package rush, which was starting to turn into good business for little operations like ours. With Thanksgiving behind us, it was time to head stateside. Plus, we were going to need some downtime to figure out what was wrong with our number 2 engine. After our last fuel stop, I could already smell the hibiscus as Dietz flew us towards our destination.
So, Tony, got any plans for Christmas?
Yeah, find a bar that's open and drink until New Year's.
What? No big family gathering?
My dad died in World War I, my mom in 38. I am an only child, and my only known living relative is Aunt Gertrude, who lives down in Florida. I haven't spoken to her since the war started, except for an occasional letter. The Army was my family for a long time, and we both know how big they are on celebrating holidays.
Oh, yeah. Merry Christmas, boys. Your objective for today is...
How about you, Dietz? You have a pretty big family. Any plans?
Not this year. We had a big blowout in 45 with the end of the war and all. You know, all the aunts, uncles, cousins, my brothers and sisters, their kids, mom, dad, apple pie. Even Granny made it for that one. Nope, this year it will just be me and Lily waiting for Santa Claus.
Santa Claus? Come on, Dietz, you don't believe in that old fairy tale.
Well, sure I do. It's what keeps me young at heart. Don't you remember getting presents from the jolly old guy?
Frankly, I don't remember getting much in the way of Christmas presents at all.
I'm truly sorry to hear that, Tony. You miss out on a lot by not believing in Santa Claus.
I believe in hard truths, Deeth. Army taught me that. Right now, I believe I better tell the professor and Marion to get ready for landing.
Here we are, Tony, safe and sound, just like I promised.
That you did, but I didn't think the landing would be quite so bumpy.
Give me a break, man. You know how the air currents coming off the ocean are.
Yeah, I'll give you that. But they're much warmer here than in Frisco.
So we're just going to drop our passengers off at the admin building?
Yeah, they have plenty of time before their next flight. I don't see the Clipper anywhere. While we're here, why don't you track down some engine oil? Number two seems to be using up quite a bit lately.
I'll do that. Well, there's a cable in the supply shack. I can send Lily a message while I'm here.
Just don't charge it to the company this time. After we stopped, I escorted our passengers to the office so they could find out where their next flight was. Then I checked in with the office manager, Jerry Gaffer, an old Army buddy of mine who ended up liking the islands more than he liked the idea of going home.
Hey, Tony, how was the flight? I saw you get caught in that beach air. Wow. Up and down. Up.
That was Deets. Other than his Goonie Bird landing, the flight was good.
I saw you had a couple of passengers. Anybody special?
I don't know about special, but they were certainly interesting. The guy was a professor of archaeology. Name was Dr. Henry Jones Jr. or something. Had some good stories, though. Just a hunch, but I'd say he may have been OSS during the war. The gal was Marion Ravens somebody or other. I hate to be on the wrong side of her in an argument.
Yeah, she looked like a spark plug.
Boy, can she play cards. And holds her liquor like you wouldn't believe.
Say, Tony, were you guys planning on lambing out of here right away?
Yeah, pretty quick. I want to get back stateside to grab some of that Christmas package money I keep hearing about.
Good, because I got a gentleman with an interesting cargo that's in a hurry to get home, if you guys think you can manage it.
Why do I get the feeling I'm being set up for something here?
The guy's name is Lucas Nast. Not exactly sure what he does, but he has a weird-looking deer that he's moving for the Honolulu Zoo.
Oh, brother.
Well, he's a nice enough old guy, but he seems to be in an awful hurry. Can you help him out?
Well, it's not like I have any other great plans, and I can't make money watching surfers. Let me talk to Dietz, and I'll let you know.
Thanks, Tony. I'll grab Mr. Nast and let him know I found him a taxi.
Brother.
Hey, Tony, I got the oil, and I got a wire through to Lily. Hey, look, buddy, I know you were hoping to spend some time in the surf, but do you think...
Way ahead of you, Dietz. Jerry here had a fare. If you're agreeable, we'll skip our tropical layover and head back to the mainland.
Hiya, Dietz. Tony, this is the guy I was telling you about. Mr. Nast, Tony Bennett.
Captain Barrett, it's a pleasure to see you.
Hello, Mr. Nast. Please call me Tony. Captain Barrett is what the Army called me. This is my co-pilot slash mechanic, Carl Dietz.
Aloha, Mr. Nast.
Nice to see you, Carl, but please call me Lucas.
Okay, Lucas. Welcome aboard. Now, where's this cargo of yours?
I'm having some of the boys bring it out. I presume you can handle a crated animal.
If it doesn't mind sharing space with some leftover blubber, shouldn't be a problem.
I know this is short notice, but I really am in a bit of a hurry to get home. It's a rather a busy time of year for me.
What is it that you do, Mr. Lucas?
I'm an import-export, Tony, but mainly I'm a toy distributor.
You should be good at that. You look like Santa Claus.
Yes, I get that a lot. I think it actually helps in my line of work.
Excuse me, gents. I have some forms for Mr. Nast to initial. And then I'm off to start my Christmas shopping. You'd never believe how hard it is to find a couple of surfboards this time of year.
Who are you buying for? I know you're not much for the water.
Well, you're right about that. I found a place that houses war orphans from the islands. There's a few boys who would like surfboards for Christmas.
Surfboards.
I'm sorry, did you say something, Lucas?
Oh, no, just making a mental note to myself. Ah, here comes Comet.
Comet?
My reindeer. You can't have a reindeer without a good name.
Comet the reindeer. Why doesn't he just fly himself home?
Because it's not Christmas. That's the only time he can fly.
Oh, right. First a guy with the nickname Indiana, now this guy. Oy. Okay, let's get loaded up and get on our way. The mainland beckons. Where in the States are we headed, Lucas?
Oh, I don't wish to go to the States. I need to go to Alaska.
Alaska? It's getting close to winter. Why would anyone want to head that way now? Besides, we were just in Dutch Harbor.
Did I mention he was willing to pay $5,000?
Well, that might change a few things.
$5,000? That would look nice, Tony.
All right, we'll do it. Where exactly in Alaska are we going, Lucas?
Fairbanks.
Fairbanks? Oh, brother. We got Mr. Nast and his crated animal loaded up, and we're soon pointed towards the west coast. We'd have to go that way, since the forecast winds would put everything else out of reach. Dietz had the wheel, so I took the time to chat with our passenger.
How did you and Carl end up flying together, Tony?
We were in the war together. He was the chief mechanic of our unit, and we became good friends during some, sticky situations.
Oh, like the Japanese bombardment of Bikini Atoll on Christmas Day?
How did you know about that? That was top secret.
I have my own sort of top secret clearance, Tony. Besides, the war's over. Some things are now declassified.
True, but still.
It's unusual for an enlisted man and an officer to become friends, isn't it?
I don't know. I never really stood on that ceremonial stuff. I've always relied on enlisted men to get things done right. Waiting for an officer often meant you were waiting for a long time.
I understand. I, too, like to direct my business from the front, as it were. I'm curious. What was or is your favorite airplane to fly, Tony?
Hadn't really thought about it. Why do you ask?
I'm in the toy business. Come Christmas, children all over are going to want toys. Since the Allies won World War II, many of those children still want toy planes flown by the heroes of the war. I just want an insider's view of what kind of plane they would like.
Oh, yeah, of course. Though I wouldn't call myself a hero.
Nevertheless, the children do look up to you and your brethren, Captain.
Well, I flew a few different models, but I think my favorite would be one my unit didn't even have. The F-4U.
Ah, yes, the Corsair. Good airplane, that. I wouldn't be surprised if those didn't become the stars of a TV show at some point. Go on.
Stars of a TV show? What? Anyway, I've actually really become attached to old Rosie here, even though she's just a cargo plane.
Rosie? But of course. I understand that every good ship should have a name. How did you come up with Rosie?
Dietz, actually. He was tinkering with the number 2 engine, again, and found the name scrawled under the cowling.
I sense a good story here. Go on.
Well, I guess whoever put this bird together knew it wasn't going to be seeing combat, but wanted to lift some morale anyway. Inside the cowling was scrawled the words, "Give 'em hell, boys. Love, Rosie. Rosie the Riveter." Since Dietz and I were both ex-Army Air Corps, we figured it was a fitting tribute to our surplus C-47, and the name stuck.
C-47? Ah, yes, the military designation for a DC-3.
Say, you're pretty sharp on those details.
Like I said, Tony, it's important in my line of work.
Lucas seemed like a likable fellow, if just a little odd. I had to agree that he could pass for department store Santa any day of the week, but there seemed something different about him. I had gone back to my sleep and was daydreaming about a certain hula girl I knew.
Tony, we got a problem here.
What's up? Uh-oh.
Yeah, it was slowly losing pressure. Now it's starting to drop like a rock from Gibraltar.
Do you think it's the same gasket? Number 2 hadn't been that bad.
From the way this thing is acting, I'm not sure there's any gasket left.
This is not good. How far are we from the shipping lane?
I make it an hour flying time, if we have an hour.
Okay, I'll get on the radio and start a mayday. You better get back and tell Mr. Nast it may get a little wet soon.
Mr. Nast? Mr. Nast? Wake up, please.
Oh, yes. What is it, Carl?
Mr. Nast, I don't want to alarm you, but we're having trouble with the number 2 engine. Big trouble. And we're most likely going to have to ditch, land, in the ocean. It'll be fine for us, but I'm afraid we won't be able to take Comet with us.
I understand, Carl, but I have complete confidence in both you and Tony. I'm sure you'll be able to make things right. And please, call me Lucas.
Sure, yeah. Well, I better get back up front. We have a little while before we get down, but you may want to make sure you're buckled in good and tight. How's it going?
Couldn't raise anybody on the radio, but hopefully somebody at least heard us. Good thing we kept the life raft, although I just don't like the thought of having any of our passengers going down, even if they have hooves.
Yeah, but I don't think we're going to find any turkey dinners way out here.
Let's worry about getting down first. It's not bad up here, but the Pacific can be a bear this time of year. How's number two doing?
Looks like she's leaking. Want me to shut her down?
Yeah, let's save as much as we can for number one and see how far we can get. With any luck...
Hey, Tony, wait! Now there's nothing coming out of number two.
What? How can that be? On the other hand, she's got a little more oomph right now. Check the gauge.
Pressure's coming back up. I swear, a minute ago there was a steady stream coming out of her. Now she looks like she was, well, just mounted in the factory.
Well, I'm not the one to count my turkeys too early, but keep your fingers crossed she'll hold up to the coast.
Is everything okay, boys?
What? Yeah. Yeah, everything's fine now, Mr. Nast. I didn't mean to scare you a minute ago, but whatever the problem was seems to have gone away.
Yeah, she's downright peppy just now.
Well, that's good. I think I'll get back to my nap now, then. And call me Chris.
Whatever you say, Mr. Nast.
First Lucas, and now Chris? I really didn't want to know. Engines don't just fix themselves, and the way number two was acting, I thought sure we were going for a swim. However, it resolved itself. I was glad it did, and we made San Francisco with no more problems. Curiously, though, when we inspected the engine, it really did look like it had just come off the assembly line, although Rosie was still enshrined in it.
I think Mr. Nast used some of his Christmas magic.
Christmas magic? Oh, come on. Surely you don't believe Mr. Lucas had anything to do with it. Or do we call him Chris?
Yeah, I'm just saying... It was right after I told him about the problem that it just, poof, disappeared.
You and your Christmas. Come on, Dietz, aren't you a little old to believe in that stuff?
You're never too old to believe in good, Tony.
Okay, Dietz, you keep your beliefs. I believe I'm going to go file a flight plan to get us to Alaska. Only it didn't turn out to be Fairbanks, at least not right away. Just as I was filing the flight plan for Fairbanks, Mr. Nast came running up.
Tony, wait a minute. I really need to make a stop in Anchorage. I've got someone I need to pick up there. Please.
Okay, Mr. Nast. It's your dime. Dietz, let's change the destination to Anchorage.
Okay, Tony.
I've got to send some telegrams. Where can I do that?
Telegram office is on the other side of the lobby.
We landed without a problem in Anchorage. There wasn't even any fog around for a change. Mr. Nast bounded out the door the minute we stopped and was back on board telling us that there was another animal crate to load. We loaded it and took off before the weather had a chance to change its mind.
You know what's in that crate we picked up in Anchorage, Skipper?
I'll break your arm if you tell me it's a reindeer.
Another one of them deer.
You've got to be kidding. I suppose this one is called Prancer.
How did you know?
Never mind. The rest of the trip to Fairbanks was uneventful. Even the skies were clear and friendly, which was highly unusual for this time of year in these latitudes. Once we landed, though, things really started to get weird. So why Fairbanks, Lucas? Seems to be quite a bit out of the way for a toy distributor.
Oh, we're actually located in North Pole, which is located just outside Fairbanks.
Oh, brother.
You don't make all the toys here, do you, Mr. Nast?
Call me Lucas. No, not all of them, but a good portion are made here.
Must be quite an operation. You wouldn't happen to need any air service delivery, would you?
Thanks, Tony, but no. I have a very good delivery service in-house. But I do have a friend in California with some goats that need to go to Lexington, Kentucky. Now, if you'll excuse me, I must be getting off to my office. An associate of mine will be along shortly to pick up the deer and to settle our debt. Good day, gentlemen, and thank you very much for a wonderful flight.
Well, you're welcome, Lucas. Fly with us anytime. Wow, how about that old bird? I expect he's way up there in years, but he certainly walks with a spring in his step. Hope I'm in that good a shape when I get to...
Don't forget the twinkle in his eye.
Oh, brother.
Are you Barrett?
Yes, I'm Tony... hello?
Down here, flyboy.
Oh, hi. I'm sorry. I didn't see
you. Yeah, very funny. Sure, it's part of the game, isn't it?
A big pardon. Didn't mean to offend you, Mr.
Call me Bernard. My name's Bernard, but you can call me Bernard.
Okay. Hello, Bernard. My name's...
Yeah, I know. You're Carl, but everyone calls you Dietz. You're on the nice list.
Well, it's nice to know I'm on somebody's nice list.
Funny, Dietz. Can we help you, Bernard?
Yeah, I'm here to get Comet. Where is he?
You'd better take Prancer as well.
Prancer's here, too. Oh, goody.
They should be in those two crates by the plane. Mr. Nast said they'd be okay in there till someone came to get them. Guess that'd be you.
Who's... Oh, right, yeah, Mr. Nast, right, yeah. Okay, now once we're loaded, you can drive the truck over...
Drive? Sorry, Bernard, nobody mentioned anything about us driving anywhere. We fly the loads, not drive them.
I assume you know how to drive as well as fly. After all, you can't fly when you're on the ground.
Well, yeah, but we thought that you...
Does it look like I could reach a gas pedal with these legs? Come on, it's not far. The truck is over in Hangar 2. The contract said you would transport and deliver them. Now, which one of you flyboys can drive a truck?
I guess that's going to be me. Tony, go talk nice to them, dear.
Yeah, yeah.
There's a block and tackle on the truck, plus a ramp to load the crates.
Yeah, it'd be kind of nice to see where you guys work.
See? Of course you can't see. Nobody can see. You'll drop us off at the front gate.
Okay. No need to get your lederhosen in a wad.
Very funny. Can we go now, flyboy?
Lead the way, Bernard. Look at the ears on that guy. I've never seen a midget with such...
Midget! Cheese and rice, I'm an elf! Flyboy, don't you forget it.
An elf? There are no such things.
And a little over 50 years ago, man couldn't fly. Yet here you are, which I find amazingly hard to believe from someone who doesn't believe. Flyboy.
Hey, watch it with that flyboy stuff, buddy, or I'll step on
Tony, you. For gosh sakes, let it go.
Yeah. Sorry, Dietz. Okay, let's get this over with. We drove a ways out of Fairbanks to get to the little burg of North Pole. It looked as if an Alpen village had gotten lost. There was no sign of activity, even when we came to a non-assuming gate across a snow-covered drive.
This is it. Drop us off here.
Well, don't you need help getting the deer out of the...
Already done. Here's your payment. Leave the truck at the airport. Have a nice day.
Well, how about that? You didn't have to be so short about it.
I heard that!
Come on, Dietz. Let's get back to the field. I don't like the looks of this weather. The sooner we're gone, the better I'll like it.
Sure, Tony. I'd hate to be in charge of Lucas' delivery schedule right now.
Me too. Hey, Dietz, see if you can scare up a couple cups of coffee while I file the paperwork.
Sounds good.
Sorry, Tony. No use filling out paperwork. Field's closed.
Closed? But we just came in.
That's winter in the north for you. 1 minute flyable, the next you're grounded.
Okay. How long do you figure?
Well, if the weather guys are correct, probably 3 weeks.
3 weeks? Are you kidding me? But Christmas is only a week away.
That's the way it works sometimes. Sorry.
I don't suppose there are any good hotels around.
Not really. We're not exactly the hub of vacation land up here. I might be able to find some cots for you. There's always a North Pole Hotel. It's empty this time of year.
Oh, brother.
Here's the coffee, buddy. Say, why the long face?
Dietz, how'd you like to spend Christmas in the Great White North? Huh. It was beginning to look like a bleak Christmas for Dietz and me. At this point, anything would have been better than a cot. But I hadn't planned on what we ended up with.
Paging Captain Barrett and Sergeant Dietz.
Let's go, you two. Shake a leg.
Who said that?
Down here, tall stuff.
And who are you?
I'm Winky.
So does that make the two of you Twinkie?
Watch it, Buster.
Let me guess. You're friends of Bernard's?
There ain't nothing between us, bub. Now let's get going.
Boss is impatient this time of year.
Go? Go where? And who's your boss?
Mr. Nast, of course. He felt bad that you two got stuck here. Says he feels responsible in some way.
Bernard is apoplectic about the whole situation.
Why would this bother Bernard?
Boss said to come fetch you two and bring you back to the North Pole.
Bernard is having kittens over the whole scheme.
Well, if there's a bed involved, I'm all for it.
We're not that kind of elves!
Settle down. I don't think that's what he meant. We just want a nice place to wait out the weather.
Don't know how much sleep you'll be getting, seeing this is the busy season.
Plant's awfully noisy right now, but you should to be above it all.
Hey, is that a tall joke?
Only if you want it to be, flyboy. Now let's go.
In what? The truck we drove back in apparently wandered off on its own.
Not to worry. We have a sled parked out back.
A sled? Oh, brother.
Don't worry, Buster. I know how to fly these things.
An open sled will freeze.
Here, knock back these hot cocos.
They're surprisingly good at keeping you warm.
We'll wrap you up real good.
Not only did the hot cocoa keep us warm, they knocked us out. All I remember was Tinky said something about a number 4. When I came to, I was more than shocked to find myself in the middle of a very soft, very comfortable bed. The room was decked out in red and had a very Christmassy feel to it. I assumed Dietz might be in an adjoining room, and a quick knock confirmed my suspicion.
Can you believe this place?
Where the hell are we?
Cursing violation! Please deposit 5 cents in the slot under the red flashing light.
Cursing violation? What in damnation?
Another cursing violation. Please deposit another 5 cents in the slot under the red flashing light.
Better do as the voice commands, Tony. And you might want to watch your tongue.
No kidding. I might go broke for doing something I didn't even know I was doing.
Where are we, anyway?
You are in the guest quarters of the No-L Incorporated.
Well, what if we don't want to be in the guest quarters? Who's in charge around here?
Someone will be with you in a moment.
Well, at least they didn't say they'd be here shortly.
Was that another short joke, Flyboy?
Bernard, how'd you get in here?
Never mind. Flyboy over here wouldn't believe me if I told him.
Now, I've just about had enough of this damn Flyboy.
Cursing violation. Please deposit 5 cents in the slot under the red flashing light.
Better do as instructed, Barrett. You don't want this to get back to the big man.
Big man? Look, short stuff, we just...
Short stuff? Okay, Flyboy, that's it. You and me, right now.
Hey, let go of my leg!
Take it easy, Bernard. Tony didn't mean anything by
it. Oh, yes, I did. First we fly reindeer all the way to the North Pole. Then we get grounded by the weather. Now we've been shanghaied by 2 midgets in a sleigh and wake up in whatever this is. What the dickens is going on?
Dickens? Ha! I see what you did there. That's a good one. You might be okay yet, Flyboy. Although I don't think you'll be wanting to spread that M-word around much up here, especially around Winky. Look, I'm on a really tight schedule, but the boss wants you to see the place. I've arranged for someone to take you on a little tour, if you think you can suspend your version of reality for a while.
I'd suspend my version of fantasy if it'd get us some answers.
Whatever we need to do, Bernard. Tony, let's just play along so we can get out of here.
I heard that. You're not going anywhere till the boss says so. Besides, where would you go? You can't fly in this soup, that's for sure.
Okay, Bernard, we're yours. Let's get the charade over with.
Charade, he calls it. No wonder he hasn't gotten a present in years. Oh, that must be the boss lady. Come on in.
Hello, boys. I hope I'm not interrupting.
Oh, not at all, Mrs. C. These are our guests, Captain Barrett and Sergeant Dietz. Boys, this is Mrs. C.
Hello.
Nice to meet you. Please, call me Carol.
I'll leave them in your capable hands, Mrs. C. I need to get back to the floor. I understand there's an issue on the toy airplane line.
Nothing you can't fix, I hope.
Minor change. Boss wants more Corsairs and fewer Spitfires.
Well, don't let us keep you.
Thanks, Mrs. C. Have fun, boys.
I must apologize for Bernard. He gets a little worked up this time of year.
I'll say. He's wound tighter than a cat at a rocking chair convention.
Carol, I don't mean to sound rude, but Dietz and I would like some answers as to where we are, how we got here, and why.
Of course, Tony. All your questions will be answered. In time. Will you trust me on that?
I suppose we don't have much of a choice. What do you say, Tony?
Yeah, okay. Guess we can't really go anywhere anyway.
Wonderful. Now, I've arranged a tour of our facility for you. At Lucas's insistence, of course. Tinky and Winky will be your tour guides. I hope you don't mind.
Sure, why not? But if you don't mind me asking, what's your connection to all this and Mr. Nast?
Oh, I would have thought that was obvious. I'm Lucas's wife.
Okay, you two, let's get this over with.
Yeah, we have big night. We have gifts to wrap.
We're all yours, ladies.
Oh, brother. So, what are we going to see? Polar bears making toys? Penguins sending Christmas cards?
Jeez, what a...
Everybody knows polar bears are working in shipping and the penguins are on guard duty.
Yeah, Tony, how come you didn't know that?
Oh, so you're going to get in on this too now, huh?
Hey, lighten up, buddy. If we're really in fantasy land, we might as well make the most of it, huh?
All of this from one cup of cocoa.
One cup of cocoa, he calls it.
Little does he know.
Well, boys, here's our first stop.
The far side. What the heck is that supposed to mean?
Open the door and find out. Twinkie and I will wait in the hallway here.
Yeah, just don't loiter too long in there.
What? Well, okay, let's go in, Tony.
Go in? I can't see my hand in front of my face in there.
Come in, boys. Don't let any of the aura out.
Well, hello. My name is Carl Dietz.
Yes, I know who you are. And you're Tony, Pleased to meet both of you.
Hi. Gosh, you sure are pretty for an
Nice out, Dietz.
Thanks, but you're not my type. Too young, I'm afraid.
Too young? Say, how old do you think I am?
I know exactly how old you are, Carl. And you, Tony. Now, what can I do for you two gentlemen?
Well, we're sort of on a tour of the facility, and we're kind of shoved into this room. I guess we're here to find out what it is you do.
What I do? Why, this is the far side. I thought it would be obvious. I look into the future to help predict trends so Mr. Nast can stay in front of the competition.
Oh, is that all? You're right. We should have known that.
Unbeliever. Fine. Would you like me to tell you what you'll have for lunch tomorrow? No, that's too simple for my talent. Perhaps you would like to see some of the things I've come up with for future production.
Well, that'd be kind of cool. Well, say, what do we call you anyway?
My name is Esmalda, but you can call me E.
Okay, E. Let's see some of these wonders. What are these small round disc things?
Exactly that. Compact discs, or CDs for short. One day, people will use them to store immeasurable amounts of information, but mostly they'll use them to listen to music.
Uh-huh. And you guys are going to produce all these things? What do you listen to them on?
The device is yet unnamed, but a Japanese company will bring them forth a few decades from now.
A Japanese company? They just lost the war. How are they ever going to be able to come up with something like this? And why would they, if you already have it?
Here at Noel Incorporated, we don't always keep what we design. We often give some of our best ideas away to help those who could use it most. This little device will help boost the Japanese economy. And don't worry, they will become one of your strongest allies in the Pacific. Why, I can even see a Japanese store in Seattle with people waiting to get in. When they unlock the doors, the people will sing, "Uwajimaya is open! Uwajimaya is now open!"
Okay, and what else have you come up with, E? I suppose you also have a means for people to talk to each other through the air without radio? Or maybe take pictures without film? How about go to the moon?
Easy, Tony, don't get too excited.
Actually, those things are all in the pipeline. Some will just take a little longer than others. The moon thing will actually be the first thing to come around.
Oh, brother.
Within a few decades, everyone will have devices that can store the information of all the world's libraries in a very small space. People will communicate with devices no bigger than their wallets. All of the world's resources will be found in one central place and can be accessed by anyone. Of course, most people will use it to watch moving pictures of cats. I'm sorry I can't spend more time with you, but I must get back to my project. It's a product that will come out in the next century. I'm thinking of calling it the podcast. Now get out.
Don't let her get you down. You should see her when she's in a bad mood.
She sure was something. What's in this next room?
Oh, that's the control room. It's really the hub of the operation. There's an observation area at the back where we can watch without interfering. Come on.
Hey. What are those big lists scrolling on the wall?
Those are the naughty and nice lists. Everybody knows about those.
Okay, but what's that third list? It seems to have more names than the other two. I've never heard of Santa having a third list.
That's the other list. It shows people who aren't quite sure about certain things.
Well, hey, Tony, your name's on that list.
Gee, imagine that.
And over there is where we handle incoming letters from children all over the world.
Good grief. Look at the size of that pile. You'll never get through these before Christmas.
We don't have to. Our monitoring system has already cataloged each child's desires before we even get to the letters.
That's impossible. How can anyone know what every child wants, especially before they tell you?
Still not getting the big picture, are you, Tony? Well, shall we continue our tour, shall we, boys?
Well, hey, Tony. Here's a room called coding.
May we look in there, ladies?
Sure, why not? Touring, are you here? We brought some guests for you.
Guests here? Of course. Do come in.
So, you're Mr. Touring?
Just touring, but yes. And you must be Barrett and Dietz.
Oh, I feel like a celebrity, Tony. Everybody knows our names.
Well, cheers to that. So what is it you do in the coding room, Touring?
I code, of course. And he's the captain.
Be nice, Tour. I think he means, what do you code?
Oh, right. Well, we have a fairly large global operation going here and don't want people horning in on our racket, so to speak. So all of our communication gets coded. That's my job. Can you imagine the ruckus if some of Esmalda's visions were known to the public? Personal computers indeed.
So you come up with all the codes?
Yes, I have a way with them. Why, even the big man himself always travels under a code name, just to make sure he's not recognized on the road.
Wait a minute. Are you saying that Lucas isn't really Lucas?
Of course he's Lucas. That's just not his real name. Here's one for you. Have you ever heard of an anagram?
Well, that's a form of code, isn't it?
Yes, indeed. It's where you take the letters of a word and form another word. That's what I do for the boss.
Wait a minute. So if you rearrange the letters in Lucas Nast, you come up with...
Santa Claus!
Did somebody call?
Hi, boss!
See, Tony, I told you so.
Now, hold on. Lucas is the one and only Santa?
Better believe it, flyboy.
Hey, where'd you come from?
Never mind. Tony Barrett, meet Santa Claus. The Big C, Kris Kringle, Father Christmas, whatever you want to call him.
Just don't call me late for Christmas Eve.
Oh, there you are, dear. It's almost time for you to get ready.
Ready? Ready for what?
Why, it's Christmas Eve, of course. Time for Santa to load up the sleigh and get a move on.
Oh, hold it a sec. How can it already be Christmas Eve? We haven't been here that long.
Dietz, you've always believed in me, and now I think your friend Captain Barrett is starting to see the light as well. Allow me to let you both in on a little secret. Seeing is believing, and believing is seeing.
Huh?
The world can be a pretty cruel place sometimes, as you've both just been witness to for the last few years. People need something, or someone, that they can trust without condition, without preamble. I represent that someone.
Yeah, but it doesn't explain the time we've spent, or haven't spent, here at the North Pole.
Sometimes, in order to believe something, you have to suspend other beliefs, like your belief about how time works, or for that matter, that reindeer can or can't fly.
I think I'm starting to get it. Believing is trusting in what your gut is telling you, rather than what your eyes are showing you. Something like that?
Exactly. Now, if you'll excuse me, I have a rather pressing engagement. Merry Christmas, Dietz, Tony.
Merry Christmas, Santa.
Merry Christmas. Have a safe trip, sir.
Don't worry. The reindeer always take good care of me. Goodbye, Carol. I'll see you soon.
Goodbye, dear. Have a pleasant journey.
Goodbye, everyone. Excellent work, as usual.
Bye, goodbye, Santa.
Well, boys, I'd say you've had rather an adventurous time of it. You understand, though, you can never tell anyone anything of what you've seen.
It won't matter. I'm pretty sure if we ever tried to convince anybody of this, Dietz and I would end up in a loony bin.
Okay, flyboys. You need to rest up before your trip home. Here, have some of Winky's hot cocoa and hit the sack for a while. I'll make the arrangements for you to get back to Fairbanks.
What about the weather? It's still a blizzard out there, isn't it?
Frankly, I could not care less, but let us worry about that. Tinky, Winky, show our guests back to their quarters.
With pleasure!
Goodbye, boys. Have a safe flight home.
Thanks, Carol. And thanks for the eye-opener, I think.
Ever the doubter. Dietz, keep an eye on him.
Yes, ma'am.
Come on, boys. This way.
Wake up, boys. We caught a break. The weather's let up, and you guys can take off as soon as you're on the plane.
Take off? Say, what time is it?
Oh, just coming up on midnight. Not that you can really tell the difference this time of year.
Good grief. How long have we been out?
How long? What are you talking about, Tony?
How many days have we been sacked out in here? Last I remember, we were, we were waiting to go to the North Pole Hotel.
Yeah, and they're closed for the year. That's why you sacked out on my cots. It's only been a few hours. Lovely dove.
Only a few hours? Hey, Tony, what's...
Frank, we wouldn't by chance have a clearance, would we?
Sure, it was called in by Bernard, the guy who handles stuff for the hotel.
Really? Well, I guess we better get going then.
Tony, you sure you're okay to fly? You and Dietz look a little white.
We'll be fine. Thanks for your help. Come on, Dietz.
See you, Frank. Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas, guys.
Dietz, I don't know what just happened, and I don't think I want to know. Let's get out of here. What are you staring at?
Rosie. Or at least, I think that's Rosie.
Oh my gosh. She looks brand new. Look, there's a note attached to the door.
Here, I got it. It says, Tony and Carl, it was a pleasure meeting you again. I hope you don't mind that I had my team do some upgrades on Rosie. I think you'll enjoy them. Lucas.
Oh, brother.
I don't know what they did, but Rosie is flying like a dream.
No kidding. At this rate, she'll be flying for years, probably longer than we are. I still can't figure out what happened to us back in Fairbanks, though. How can the two of us have had the same hallucination?
Maybe it wasn't a hallucination, Tony. Remember what Santa or Lucas or whoever he was said about believing?
Dietz, do me a favor and let's forget about old what's-his-name, shall we? Whatever that was, I'm sure... What the heck is that?
That sure looks like a bunch of reindeer pulling a sleigh to me, Tony.
I hate to admit it, but I think you're right.
Oh, ho, ho! Merry Christmas, boys!
Merry Christmas, Santa.
Changed your mind, eh, buddy?
Like the man said, Dietz, believing is seeing.
Merry Christmas, Tony.
Merry Christmas, Carl. Now let's get the hell out of here. Oh, brother.
You have been listening to a holiday confection from American Radio Theater, Charter Flight, Operation 2, Destination North Pole. It was written by Ken Leese, based on the original Charter Flight written by Gus C. Bays, produced and directed by Joy Jackson for the 2015 ART Christmas broadcast. In our cast, you heard Ken Leese as Tony Barrett, Chuck Royalty as Carl Dietz, Kim Turner as Lucas Nast, a.k.a. Santa Claus, Greg Porter as Bernard, Beth Schlansky as Carol, Mary Moore Campagna as Tinky, Karen Leese as Winky, Bob Perks as Turing, Magpie McLaurin as Esmalda, Dan Schindler as Jerry Gaffer, Dave Leese as Frank, Steve Miller as Tower Operator, Linda Rasmussen as The Voice. Live sound effects by Penny Swanberg, playback by Joy Jackson, sleigh bells by Joy Jackson, engineering by Ron Ailey. Thank you to Marilyn Wilt for the use of her house for the festivities. I'm Mark Whitworth, your announcer. This is ART, American Radio Theater.
Well, if that's not enough, I've got another Christmas tale from ART. It's kind of a horror story called The Crumbs at Midnight, adapted for radio by Greg Porter.
American Radio Theater presents an original holiday horror story, Crumbs at Midnight, written by David Templeton, adapted and directed by Greg Porter.
What happened on Christmas Eve, just as the clock struck midnight. It took place 1 year ago this very night. I know, because I was there and saw it all. And believe me, it was terrible. And it was scary, and it was strange. It was also messy. Incredibly messy. And it's going to happen again tonight. There were six of us then. The angel, the reindeer, and the cute little star were sugar cookies. They were all sweet, but the angel was the sweetest, with a little wire halo and twice as much icing as the rest of us. There was a chocolate chip snowman, a little crusty around the edges, but still a pretty smart cookie. And there was a shortbread teddy bear, flaky on the outside, but tough in all the right places. And then there was me, the gingerbread man. We were all piled together on a big plate in the living room where it was gloomy and dark. The fireplace had dwindled to a faint glimmer, and the only other light came from the little sparkly bulbs on the Christmas tree. It was almost midnight. The house was locked up, and the dog had been put away for the evening, and the people had all gone off to bed. It was very, very quiet. Having determined that it was safe, we all sat up and looked around. We were alone, just 6 warm cookies resting on the great plate, which we noticed we'd been sharing with a large carrot. A carrot? Must have been some kind of mistake. Next to the plate, there was a big glass of milk, and on the table beside the glass was a piece of paper with words scribbled in thick red crayon.
Dear Santa, the carrot is for Rudolph, but these are for you. Merry Christmas!
If only we'd realized what those mysterious words had meant. If only we'd run away and hid ourselves the moment we saw them, things might have turned out differently. But we didn't know anything. The snowman was dancing a jig on the tabletop. The reindeer was giving rides to the little star and the teddy bear. The angel, reluctant to leave the big plate, was warning the others to be careful. Me? I was eager to learn more about where we were and why, so I stepped away to check things out. But I never had a chance to study the room because suddenly, from high above us, a raspy little voice called out.
A fireplace! Watch the fireplace! At the stroke of midnight, it'll happen. It'll come down the chimney. It'll come through the fireplace, and there'll be nothing left but crumbs. Crumbs all over the carpet.
Alarmed, we gathered on the big plate, huddling close as we stared up at the Christmas tree where the voice had come from. Dangling from a branch about 5 feet up, there was an old ornament, an ancient, half-crumbling Christmas bangle, gazing forlornly down at the 6 of us. He was handmade, crafted into the shape of a Christmas cookie. A gingerbread man, to be exact.
What do you mean, old ornament? What will be coming through the fireplace?
Oh, it's hard to say what it is. But it happens every year at the stroke of midnight. It's always big, it's always red, it's always hungry. And it'll be coming straight for you.
All the cookies began to murmur and wonder aloud.
What kind of thing could it be?
What kind of creature is so big and so red and so hungry?
What kind of monster would eat cookies?
And what are we going to do? It's almost midnight.
It was indeed just 1 minute until midnight. The old ornament from up in the tree merely shook his head, repeating the terrible words.
Crumbs. Nothing but crumbs.
We'll fight it then.
We'll teach it a lesson.
We'll chase it right back up the chimney.
Just then the angel interjected.
No, we should just stay on the big plate, right where they put us. What do we know? We're only cookies. If we stay on the plate, we're certain to be safe.
Oh, what should we do?
But before anyone could answer, the clock gave the first of 12 long, loud chimes. The second chime had barely faded in our ears when a brilliant, reddish glow began growing brighter and brighter inside the fireplace. We heard a rustling, scuffling sound and the ringing of tiny little bells. Yes, something was coming, and coming fast, right down the chimney. The clock struck 3. Run! I shouted. In a flash, I raced across the table. Stopping at the very edge, I peered over, staring in dismay at the carpet more than 2.5 feet below. As the little star ran about in circles, the reindeer and the snowman crowded in close behind at the edge, but there was nowhere for any of us to go. The clock struck 5.
Everyone back on the plate. We were put on this plate for a reason.
The clock struck 6. The teddy bear, frantically glancing over its shoulder at the fireplace, ran toward the rest of us, right up to where we stood cowering at the edge. But he wasn't looking, and crashed into us with a mighty thump, sending the reindeer, the snowman, and me right over the side. We fell to the carpet with a crunch. Fortunately, the carpet was soft enough to break our fall, and the snowman and I weren't seriously injured. The reindeer, however, was wounded. One antler had been snapped off with a crisp pop. As the clock struck 8, I spied a bit of space beneath the sofa, and as fast as I could, I led a charge across the floor, past the tree, toward the safety of the sofa. But the teddy bear and the star were still stranded on the table as the sounds from the fireplace were growing louder and louder. Jump! I shouted. Jump! I'd reached the sofa. As my 2 companions slipped under and out of sight, the clock struck 11. Terrified, the little star closed its eyes and leaped from the table. But as it landed, it began to roll in a wide looping curve that turned away from the table and ran straight toward the fireplace. Finally, it came wobbling to a stop. The cookie opened its eyes and yelped. Seeing that it was too far from the sofa all the way across the room, the star spied a fallen stocking lying beside her and ducked inside as the clock struck 12. Up on the table, the angel lay perfectly still, while the teddy bear flung himself down beside the glass of milk, pulling the paper note up over himself like a blanket. I watched all of this in horror, but there was nothing I could do. I ducked under the sofa with the reindeer and the snowman, trying to stay out of sight. From where we hid, we could see the table, the bottom of the tree, and the fireplace. The 12th chime was still singing in the air when suddenly, in a roar of sound and a puff of light, a monster, part mammoth, part mountain, slid down the chimney and out into the room. The enormous man carried a huge bag, packed full of things that clicked and jingled. As he stood to his full height, I saw that he was everything the old ornament had said he would be. He was big, he was red, and he was hungry. After dropping the sack on the ground, not far from where we were hiding, the enormous man turned to survey the room. Almost immediately, he saw the table, the plate, and the cookie. With one mighty step, the thing moved forward, leaned over the plate, and snatched up the angel, lifting it to its face to examine it closely. And then he bit off its head. An explosion of crumbs scattered over the table, and the little wire halo popped into the air and went spinning down, bouncing off the table and onto the floor, where it skittered toward the sofa. Not noticing, the enormous man took another bite, and another. And by the time the little wire halo had slid to a halt, not 2 inches from where we were hiding, the angel was all gone.
So much for staying on the plate.
That sugar cookie never had a chance.
Shh, I whispered. If we all stay hidden, it might just go away. But the enormous man wasn't going anywhere. He was still hungry. He was scanning the table, searching for more cookies. Picking up the plate, he peered beneath it. Then he stepped back and leaned over to examine something at his feet. In the same instant that he saw it, I saw it too. A little pile of crumbs on the carpet, in the same spot where we had fallen from the table. The crumbs belonged to the reindeer. He must have shed them when he lost the antler. With a shock of realization, I saw that a thin trail of crumbs led away from that spot and snaked across the carpet to where we were now crouching. On his hands and knees now, the enormous man was crawling, following the trail of crumbs. In a few seconds, he would find us. Unexpectedly, a loud, shrill clanking sound erupted from the direction of the table. The dog started barking somewhere deep inside the house, and the enormous man stopped crawling. I beckoned to the reindeer and snowman, pointing to the giant sack that was now resting between the sofa and the tree. It was our only chance, so we dashed out into the open and climbed beneath the sack. Distracted by the odd noises, the enormous man hadn't seen a thing, but I could see everything. On the table, the shortbread teddy bear was banging loudly on the glass of milk, using the carrot as a drumstick. The bear was trying to draw the enormous man away from us, risking his life so that we could get away. He was a brave cookie, I'll tell you that. Seeing that the enormous man had stopped searching for us, the teddy bear clutched the carrot and jumped behind the tall glass. Unable to hide there for long, knowing that he had but a few seconds, the bear made a last desperate attempt to save himself. He stepped out onto the table and, using the carrot as a stick, vaulted up into the air and dropped down into the glass of milk. Just as the enormous man stood up and turned back to face the table. Who knows how long that cookie might have lasted in there? A minute or two? Long enough to stay out of sight until the monster went away, that's possible. But it didn't matter, because now the enormous man was thirsty. He reached for the glass of milk, lifted it to his lips, and guzzled with gusto. Down went the bear, icing and all. Everything after that is a blur. How did the reindeer finally perish? I can barely remember. He was uncovered when the enormous man emptied the sack of packages and found him hiding there. All I remember is the mighty crunch that shook the night and the spattering of crumbs that dusted the floor. The little star might have survived had the big hungry man not discovered him in the stocking while filling it with nuts and trinkets. And the snowman? Well, the snowman's end was the biggest surprise of all. The reindeer and the star were already gone, eaten by the enormous man. Determined that at least two of us would survive, I ducked behind the packages that had been left under the tree, and I looked around for the snowman. Having escaped from under the sack while the enormous man was drinking the shortbread teddy bear, the snowman had discovered a way out. There was a hallway, long and dark, leading away from the living room, far from the awful crumb bath that was taking place. The snowman stopped at the entrance of the hall and turned to face me, beckoning for me to follow. He never saw it coming. From out of the depths of the darkened hall, the dog appeared. A mastiff, I think, or perhaps a chihuahua. What do I know about dogs? I'm just a gingerbread man.
Without even stopping, the dog rushed upon the snowman from behind and gobbled him without even swallowing. From up in the tree, I could hear the old ornament mournfully muttering.
Every year the same. The dog always gets the one with the chocolate chips.
I was the last cookie standing. Nearly paralyzed with dread and disbelief, I ducked back behind the packages. The dog trotted happily back up the hallway and disappeared into the darkness. I sat listening to the noises of the room. There was nothing but the ticking of the clock and the sizzle of the coals in the fireplace. From somewhere far away, I heard a faint jingling. Still, I waited until I was certain that I was finally alone, finally safe. And then the clock struck. It was 1 in the morning. The midnight hour was over. With a sigh of relief, I collapsed onto the carpet. But without warning, the packages suddenly parted all around me, flung aside by big gloved hands, and there in front of me, smiling with glee, was the enormous man.
Aha!
Before I could move, he'd grabbed me. Those giant hands wrapped themselves around my middle, and I was brought closer and closer to his face, bearded and rosy-cheeked, with a mouth that was opening wider and wider. The mouth closed around me, and I knew it was all over. But suddenly I was out again. A bit moist, but otherwise unharmed. The enormous man was holding me out at arm's length, eyeing me suspiciously as an expression of disappointment appeared across his face.
Gingerbread? I hate gingerbread.
With that, he set me back down among the packages and jumped away. I heard a final jingle of little bells and a whoosh like a warm wind up the chimney and nothing more. When I finally found the courage to look again, the enormous man was gone, and he'd taken the carrot with him. I was safe at last. Or was I? If I learned anything from that long, terrible Christmas night, it is this. In a world such as this one, no cookie is ever safe. And there are worse dangers than hungry dogs and enormous men. There are children. There are mothers and fathers, aunts and uncles. They all eat cookies, and they'll never stop. The old ornament explained it all to me. He told me of the night so many years before when he, too, had survived the enormous man. Yes, the old ornament was once a gingerbread cookie. He, too, was left on the plate to be eaten at midnight. And having survived, he realized that, with sunrise, others would come, perhaps not so big and not so red, but hungry nevertheless. So do you know what he did? He climbed into the towering tree and, with a spare piece of wire, made himself a little hook. To the people, he was just another Christmas ornament to be packed away with the lights and the bangles. Each year since then, he's been brought out and hung once more in the tree, and each time he has watched as the same events happen again. Now, there are 2 gingerbread ornaments hanging in this tree. It was easy. With the wire from the angel's little halo, I made a sturdy hook, found a good branch high up, and that was that. It was 1 year ago that I gave up being a cookie and became a Christmas tree ornament. 1 year ago, this very night. So the question is, what are you going to do, little cookies? You shortbread bears and sugar cookie angels and crusty snowmen, will you lie there on the plate and wait to see if my story is true? Wait to see if the carpet is covered once again in 1,000 crumbs? Or will you believe me? Will you get up now and run? Run, run for your lives? Whatever you decide, you'd better decide now, because, my little cookies, the clock is about to strike. It's midnight, and here comes Santa Claus.
Crumbs at Midnight, an original holiday horror story, was written by David Templeton and adapted and directed for American Radio Theater's 2013 holiday party by Greg Porter, whom you heard as your narrator, the Fresh Gingerbread Man. Others in the cast, including the following sweet cookies. Bob Perks as the teddy bear. Rhea Lutton as the reindeer. Kay Lutz as the star. Ken Lease as the snowman. Kim Turner as the angel. Dan Schindler as the old ornamental gingerbread man. Beth Schlansky as the note to Santa. And Michael Mokey O'Reilly as the old monster himself, Santa Claus. Live sound effects by Marilyn Wilt and Beth Schlansky. Recorded by Joy Jackson during ART's holiday party on December 7, 2013 in Seattle. I'm Dave Lease, your announcer, and this is ART, American Radio Theater.
Gee, that's all the time I've got for today. Have a happy and healthy holiday. And I'll see you in the new year. Bye.
Okay, Joy. Thanks a lot. And I will take it from here. Well, folks, that is just about going to do it. So we are going to wrap things up and shut things down for this week's broadcast of Michael's Saturday Night Surprise. But don't worry, we will be back again next week. You know where and you know when. If you have any questions, comments, complaints, or maybe even a request or two, please address them via email to micamelli@earthlink.net. That's micamelli@earthlink.net. We will soon be releasing the key and returning the room to you, the listening audience. Please do with it as you wish for as long as you wish. But just remember, be nice to one another. On behalf of myself and the rest of the MSS crew, have a great night, a great weekend, and goodbye.